Osho.
Come Follow Yourself, Volume 3, Reflections on Jesus of Nazareth, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 8.
The first question. I often desire to have an isolated, secure place to allow surrender. Meditation several hours a day, going deeper and deeper, without distraction. As I understand, most yoga masters teach that withdrawal from the world is necessary for a period of time. Once Kundalini starts rising, until one is finally established in samadhi, at which time one can really be in the world, but not of it. Your teaching seems to be different, to engage in the world while the transformation is occurring. If this is so, how do I avoid the distraction of Maya before I clearly see the reality? The first thing, the ego always seeks isolation in 1001 ways. When you become very rich, you become isolated. When you become very politically powerful, you become isolated. And Adolf Hitler is alone, more alone than a yogi in the Himalayas. He has no friends, nobody equal to him. He has no relationships. A very rich man reaches to a Himalayan peak where he is alone. Hence one seeks riches. Hence one seeks political power. The ego is always in search of isolation. Because when you are alone, only the ego remains. The ego becomes the whole world. Then there is nobody to fight with your ego. There is nobody to humiliate you. There is nobody with whom you can compare. You become supreme in your own eyes. You can believe in your ego. Absolutely, there will be no distraction. I am against isolation. In fact, you have to dissolve the ego, not to isolate it. You are not to become an island, independent, separate from the whole. You have to become the part of the continent, one with it. How you can be one with reality in isolation? The reality needs participation, not isolation. That's why the greatest samadhi occurs in love, not in isolation. And the greatest of yoga is love. Because in love, you have to dissolve yourself. In love, you have to die. In love, you have to melt, merge. I teach love, not isolation. Isolation is the way of the world, not of the way of religion. But it happens. You have been seeking riches, political power, possessions. Then you become frustrated. Then you turn to the Himalayas. You renounce the world. You don't renounce the ego, you renounce the world. I teach you, renounce the ego, don't renounce the world. The ego is very subtle. You could not attain to political power. Then you try to attain the religious power. You call it kundalini. But still it is power. Still it is something that will make you separate, unique, independent, an island. If your religion is also a search for power, then isolation is needed. But religion is not search for power. It is search for silence. It is search for peace. It is search for inner poverty, what Jesus calls poor in spirit. It is a search to be in such a way that there is no difference between to be and not to be. Non-being becomes your only being. This is possible not through independence. This is possible only if you realize interdependence. These three words have to be remembered: dependence, independence, and interdependence. Dependent you are. Independence you seek. Interdependence I teach. Dependent you are, because everywhere you will feel you are dependent. Everywhere a limitation comes in. If you love somebody, you become dependent on him or on her. Everywhere a life brings dependence, then the idea arises that in the world you can never be independent, escape from the world. You can escape, but independent you can never be. You can only be deceived. Even in the Himalayas, you are not independent. You are still dependent on the sun. If the sun does not rise, you will be dead immediately. You will be dependent on the oxygen, on air. If the oxygen disappears, you will be dead. You will be dependent on water. You will be dependent on 1001 things. Dependence has to be understood, not to be avoided. If you understand dependence, you will understand immediately that hidden behind it is interdependence. Dependence is just a misinterpretation. Those who have known, they have known also that you are not dependent on the sun. The sun is also dependent on you. Without you, the sun cannot be, as you cannot be without the sun. Even a small blade of grass will be missed from existence. The existence will never be complete without it. A gap, something missing will be there. So don't think that the stars are great and a blade of grass is very small and tiny. In existence, nothing is great and nothing is small, because existence is one. This is what is meant by ecology, interdependence. And ecology is not only of this earth, it is of the totality. Ecology is a spiritual phenomenon. You are misinterpreting. You are interpreting interdependence as dependence. That is a wrong notion. And because of that wrong notion, a wrong desire arises. How to be independent? Out of one error, another error arises. You cannot be. And if somebody teaches you independence, there are people who teach. They are teaching sheer stupidity. You are part. You are one with the whole. You are a wave in the ocean. The wave cannot be independent. How can you take the wave apart from the ocean? And I tell you, the ocean can also be, cannot be separate from the wave. Without waves, the ocean will also disappear. The waves cannot be without the ocean cannot be without the waves, because waves are nothing but ocean waving. Because of language, the separation arises. You say the waves and the ocean. In fact, there are not the waves and the ocean. It is all one. The ocean waving. Waves are not things. A process, a movement, a breathing of the ocean. You and your breathing are not two things. You are the breathing. The breathing is you. You breathe, and the breathing breathes you. They are inseparable. Life is one. For this oneness, interdependence, God is another name. Love is still another name, and even better than God, because God has been destroyed by the theologians. Love is still pure and virgin. So the first thing to be understood, I don't teach isolation, because I don't teach the ego. Your so-called yoga masters are all more or less egoists. Once a man came to me, and he thinks he is a great seeker. Ego finds new ways to be fulfilled. He's a great seeker. He's very old, 75. He told me that for his whole life he has been seeking a perfect master, the greatest in the world, because he cannot be satisfied by anything less than that. I asked him, could you find? He said, yes. I met many, but I had to leave them. Few were self-deceived. Few were deceiving others. Few were mad. Few were simply idiots. Few were greedy, exploitators. Few were just parrots repeating the Vedas and the Upanishads. And many more wrong sorts of guides I met. But then his eyes sparkled. He said, I came across a man who is a perfect master. And I immediately spoke up and I told him that you are the greatest master in the world. I asked this seeker, when did you tell this to him? He said, when he told me that you are the perfect disciple in the world, immediately. The ego goes on seeking different ways to be enhanced. In the name of yoga, much ego trip goes on. Don't become a part of it. I don't teach isolation because I want you to leave the ego and not the world. The world is not the problem. The world is tremendously beautiful. It is pure joy. Nothing is wrong in it. Something is wrong in you, not in the world. Drop that wrongness in you. Don't renounce the world. I teach you to celebrate the world, not to renounce it. I affirm life and affirm it unconditionally. And I tell you, those who say to you to renounce it are the poisoners. And from the very beginning they are teaching you something absolutely wrong. They are saying that something is wrong in the world. They call it Maya. I call you Maya, not the world. The ego is the only Maya, the only illusion. Not these trees, they are simply beautiful. Not these flowers, not these birds, not this sky, not this sun, these stars. No, they are simply beautiful. They are divine and holy. You are the Maya. So if you want to leave anything, leave yourself. If you want to renounce anything, renounce yourself. And the only way, to renounce oneself is to celebrate. Because whenever you are happy, you are not. Whenever you are sad, you are. Whenever you are depressed, you are. Whenever you are delighting, you are not. In bliss, in ecstasy, you disappear. In sadness and sorrow, you again appear. Watch. When you laugh, you are not. In a real laughter, simply you are not. It comes out from somewhere you know not of. It comes from beyond you. You don't laugh. When laughter is there, you are not. Dance. When the dance really possesses you. When really there is a dance, the dancer is no more. The dancer has disappeared. It doesn't exist. The dance is so tremendously real that the unreal has to disappear before it. The unreal cannot face the real. The false cannot confront the real. The lie cannot face the truth. The darkness cannot encounter light. When the real arises, and the real is when you are part of the whole, whether in laughter, in dancing, in love. Whenever you are part of the whole, the real is. Separate, you are Maya. One with the whole, you are God. I often desire to have an isolated, secure place to allow surrender. When you are alone, a false type of religiosity arises. Because whenever you are alone, there is nobody to provoke your anger. Nobody to create an opportunity where you can become sad. Nobody to bring you your own false faces before you. You are alone. Anger does not arise. Not that anger has disappeared. Simply the situation for anger is not there. You are full of anger, but nobody is there to insult you, to hurt you. Only the opportunity is missing. Come back in the world and living 50 years in the Himalayas, when you come back to the world, immediately you will find anger is there as fresh as ever. Even maybe more powerful now, because 50 years accumulated anger, accumulated poison. Then one becomes afraid to come to the world back. Go to the Himalayas, you will see many people hanging around there. Cowards, they cannot come back to the world. What sort of purity is this, which is afraid? What sort of celibacy is this, which is afraid? What sort of reality is this, which is afraid of Maya, illusion? What sort of light is this, which is afraid of darkness, that if it comes to the darkness will be powerful and may destroy it? Has darkness ever destroyed any light? But they go on hanging. The more they hang there, the more they become incapable of coming to the world. Because there in the Himalayas, they can have their beautiful image, nobody else to destroy it. In the world, it is difficult. Somebody from somewhere treads on your toe. Somebody from somewhere hurts you. You have to drop anger. My whole effort is so that you change. Don't try to change the scene. Please change yourself. The change of the scene is not going to help anybody. It has never helped anybody. And you think meditation several hours a day, even if you meditate 24 hours a day, it is not going to help. Unless meditation becomes a way of life, not that you meditate. Whether you meditate 1 hour or 2 hour or 3 hour or 6 hour or many hours, you may meditate 24 hours, you will go mad, but you will not attain to samadhi. Samadhi is when you completely forget what meditation is. You don't meditate. Just the way you live is meditative. The way you move, the way you walk, the way you eat, that becomes meditative. Meditation becomes a quality of your life. It is not a question of quantity. Don't be quantitative. Don't think that if you meditate more, then more meditation will happen to you. Foolish. The more is not the question. Quality, not quantity. Meditation is not money that you can go on gathering and piling up. Meditation is a way of being. You don't pile it up. You cannot accumulate it. It is not a wealth. It is the way you are. So whatsoever you are doing here are really not meditations. They are just situations through which I would like you to see. They are just preparations for the meditation. We call them meditations because they prepare you for the right meditation. That is just clearing the ground. Just cleansing the ground. They are not real meditations. Because real meditation cannot be done as real love cannot be done. It happens. You simply cleaning your mind body. You are purifying yourself so that you can become a vehicle. So that you can be possessed. Then whatsoever you do meditatively. There have been stories of people who have attained to enlightenment, who were robbers or butchers, but they attained because whatsoever they did was meditative. I have heard one Taoist story that one emperor of China had a butcher. And he always loved to see him whenever he will come to kill the animals for his kitchen. The emperor will come and see and watch. Because the whole thing was so beautiful, such an ugly thing. But the butcher was so beautiful. He did it as if he was doing a prayer. He did it as if he was in deep ecstasy. And for 30 years the emperor watched and watched, and he was never fed up. Every day he waited with great excitement, the butcher will be coming. The butcher carried a certain climate around him, as if he was going to the temple to pray to God, and he was just going to kill animals. First he will pray. Then he will talk to the animal. Then he will thank to the animal. And when he will kill the animal, each of his gestures had a tremendous beauty of its own. The emperor used to watch. One day he asked, "I have been seeing you for 30 years. I am never fed up. Every day I wait excitedly. I don't wait so excitedly for anything else in the 24 hours. What is the secret of it?" The butcher said, "Because it is meditation for me. I am a butcher. That's the way God has willed me to be. I was born a son to a butcher. That's how God has willed me to be. This is my life, and I have made it a meditation. If God wants me to be a butcher, let it be so. But I should be meditative. So this is my meditation. I go into deep ecstasy. It is not just an activity. It is an act of love. God is there in the animal. God is in me. And God wants to kill God himself. Perfectly okay, who I am to interfere. I simply become a vehicle. I am simply purchased. There are stories of people who were robbers and thieves. They have also attained. What was their secret? The same. And I know people who have lived in a Himalayan retreat for their whole life and has not attained to anything. It is not a question of quantity, that how much you do. The question is how you do it not how much. What quality you bring to it? You can just walk and it can be meditative. You can just sit and it can be meditative. You can eat and it can be meditative. And you can just take a shower and it can be meditative. Try to understand this. Meditation should become a climate around you, a milieu in which you live. And wherever you go, you carry your climate. This is my holy first. That's why I don't send you to isolation. I don't send you to some mountains so that you can meditate the whole day, because that will give you a wrong notion about it, the notion of quantity. Going deeper and deeper without distraction. You can never go deeper and deeper if you don't understand what distraction is. If you are trying to avoid distraction, you can never go deeper, because wherever you will be, the distraction will follow you, because it is in you. I will tell you one story. One man was very much distracted by his wife. Because whenever he will meditate, the wife will talk loudly or walk and close the doors so loudly, and plates will start falling, and he was very much distracted. So he left the house. He went into a forest. But then, animals, crows started distracting him. Sometimes even this was also happening, that there was no distraction and that will become the distraction. What is the matter? There is no distraction. Absolute silence and he will be distracted. What is happening? Have all the animals and the birds disappeared? Distraction is not something objective, not there outside you. It is something in you. If you cannot accept, you will be distracted. If you accept, distraction disappears. Once it happened, I was staying in a rest house. And a political leader was also staying there. A very small rest house in a small village. The political leader came to me in the mid of the night and he said, "It is impossible to sleep. How you are sleeping?" He shook me. I said, "Why? How are you sleeping? It is so much distant." Somehow or other, at least 24 dogs, they must have made the rest house their abode. The whole village dogs. Maybe they were having a political gathering or something. And there was such a loud barking and fighting. He said, "But how you are sleeping? These dogs won't allow me to sleep and I am tired." I said to the political leader, "But they are not aware of you. They don't read newspapers. They don't listen to the radio. They don't go to the television. They are not aware about you. I was here before also. That is their usual way. They are not doing it especially for you." You are fighting, resisting. The notion that they are disturbing you is disturbing you, not they. Accept them. I told him to do one small meditation. lie down on the bed, enjoy their barking. Let it be a music. Enjoy. Listen to it as attentively as possible. He said, how it is going to help me? I want to forget that they are there, and you are telling me to listen to them. That will disturb me even more. I told him, you just try. You have been trying your way and it has failed. Now try my way and you can see that it has been successful with me. He was not ready, and he didn't believe it. But there was no other way, so he tried. And within 5 minutes, he was fast asleep and snoring. And I went, I shook him up. How you are sleeping? How it is possible? If you accept, nothing can distract you. It is the very rejection in you that creates the distraction. So if you want to meditate without distraction, don't reject anything. The traffic noise has to be accepted. It is part of this world and perfectly okay. The child crying and weeping is part of this world and perfectly okay. Once you say that everything is okay, just watch the feeling that everything is okay and you accept it. Something within you melts. Then nothing distracts. And unless this happens, you can go anywhere you like. You will be distracted by one thing or another. As I understand, most yoga masters teach that withdrawal from the world is necessary. It is not necessary at all. Not only that it is not necessary, it is harmful. Because who is withdrawing? In withdrawal, the ego will be strengthened. Don't withdraw. Rather melt. I teach you just the opposite. Melt. Most yoga masters teach that withdrawal from the world is necessary for a period of time, once Kundalini starts rising, until one is finally established in samadhi, at which time one can really be in the world but not of it. No. If you have not been from the very beginning that way, suddenly in the end it is not going to happen. If it has been from the very beginning that way, only then in the end it will flower. If you withdraw from the world, you will never be capable to come back to the world and be in the world and not of it, no. Because it cannot happen suddenly. It is a gradual process. You have to imbibe the spirit of it by and by. It is just like a small seed sprouting, becoming a plant and becoming a tree. You say that suddenly, first we will withdraw from the world and then we will come back to the world. In the very withdrawal, you will be disconnected with the world. You will become afraid to come back. Go and look at Catholic monasteries, Hindu monasteries. People have become afraid. They don't come back. There are monasteries in Europe where once you enter, you never get out of the monastery again until you die. why these monasteries exist. There are monasteries where never in the history any woman has entered. Catholic monks. There are monasteries of nuns where no man has ever entered. For centuries. What type of crystallization is this? Fear crystallized. Nothing else. Withdrawal crystallized. And they all go on saying that one should live in the world and be not of it. But that has not happened. Look in the Jain monks. They are afraid of everything. 50 years a monk has been a monk. He cannot touch a woman's hand. He cannot look eye to eye into a woman's eyes. What type of samadhi is this? Maybe suicide, but not samadhi. What type of attainment is this? I cannot call it any attainment. It is not that Kundalini has risen. Kundalini has slept completely, died completely. The fire has disappeared. There is no fire. If you want really to come to that beautiful space where you are in the world and not of it, then you have to be that way from the very beginning. You have to remain in the world and work out. It is difficult, I know. That's why people escaped in the forest, because that looked simple. You think those who have escaped from the world are very brave, then you are in a totally wrong notion. They are cowards. They have escaped because they could not cope. They have escaped because they could not grow. They have escaped because the world was too much. But they have decorated their escape beautifully. And for centuries those cowards have been writing scriptures and commentaries because nothing else to do. They go on doing that. And their whole energy has been wasted in verbalization. And they go on convincing other cowards. Religion is courage. It is not cowardice. Be brave to face the world. And whatsoever you want to be in the end, be from the very beginning. That is the only way. Carry it from the very first step, because the first step is the last step also. Your teaching seems to be different to engage in the world while the transformation is occurring. If this is so, how do I avoid the destruction of Maya before I clearly see reality? There is no need to avoid anything. All effort to avoid is out of fear. Live it, don't avoid it. Live the Maya and you will come to know reality. Because this Maya is also a hidden reality. The appearance is also of the reality. Let me repeat it. The appearance is also of the reality. Don't avoid it, otherwise reality will be avoided in it. Go deep into it, live it, enjoy it, penetrate it. The Maya, Hindus have called, is the shroud of Brahma, his clothing. Don't avoid it. If you avoid my clothes and escape, you will be escaping from me also. You will have to accept my clothes. You will have to come closer and closer. Only then you can know me, who is hidden in the clothes. God is hidden in his Maya. Maya means his magic. God is hidden in his magic. The word magic comes from Maya. The God is hidden in these flowers, in these trees, in these rocks, in you, in me. From every eye he is looking out. From every flower, it is his fragrance that is coming out. This is the way he is. This is his appearance. Avoid it and you will avoiding him. Enter into it. Enter the fragrance of the flower and you will find the fragrance of God hidden. Enter any human being in deep love, compassion, humbleness, and behind the body you will find him embodied, and behind the eyes you will find him looking at you. Look into somebody's eyes with deep compassion and love, with deep inquiry, with no prejudice and no idea. Just enter into somebody's eyes and go deeper and deeper and deeper, and suddenly he is there in his absolute beauty and purity. I don't say avoid. That word is dirty for me. I say enter. The Maya is the temple of God. Enter into it. The world is the temple of God. The body is the temple of God. Enter into it. Find as many ways you can find to enter into it. Try to find God from everywhere and through everything. And you will find him everywhere and in everything, says Jesus. Underneath every stone I am hidden. Take the rock up and you will find me there. Break wood and you will find me there. Everywhere he is. He is the very existence itself, the very ignis. Don't try to avoid. Escape, avoid, renunciation, isolation are wrong words. Don't use them. Let them not be part of vocabulary, your vocabulary. Drop them out. Find out positive terms. Find out positive words of involvement, commitment, enjoyment, celebration, delight, ecstasy. And you will be on the right path. The reality and the illusion are not opposites. The God and his world are not the opposites. The God is hidden in the world. And the reality is hiding behind the appearance. And the appearance is also beautiful. The appearance is also beautiful. Not only that the soul is beautiful, the body is also beautiful. And it has to be so, because soul is hidden behind it. The soul goes on being expressed from the body in millions of ways. The body is just like a glass. Behind it is the flame. and the flame goes on spreading its rays outside the glass. Whenever you see a beautiful person, it simply hints, it simply gives you an indication that behind it there is some unknown beauty hiding. That's why a beautiful body attracts. It is natural. A beautiful flower attracts. It is natural. Because it's simply an indication, a natural indication, an invitation that something beautiful is hidden behind. Come. Investigate me. Come. The beautiful body attracts because of the beautiful soul. You attend to a beautiful body if you attend to a beautiful soul. It is not just coincidence. It is not chance. The more beautiful you become inside, the more beautiful you become on the outside also. If a very ugly body becomes more and more deeply involved in meditation, you will suddenly see the ugliness changing. And behind the ugliness, beauty being expressed more and more. Once the innermost core becomes beautiful, the outer periphery follows it. The appearance is also beautiful. It happened, a Zen master died, and his chief disciple started crying and weeping. A million people had gathered. The master was very famous, and the chief disciple was even more famous than the master. And those who were closest, they came to the chief disciple and they said, please don't cry and weep, because that will create a bad name for you. Because people think that you have become a realized soul. And you have been saying yourself that there is no death, then why are you crying? And you yourself have been teaching your whole life that only the body dies, not the soul. Then why are you crying? And the chief disciple said, yes, I have been telling you that the soul never dies, only the body dies. But who told you that I am crying for the soul? I am crying for the body. Because my master's body was so beautiful that it happens rarely in centuries. Such a beautiful flower surrounded him because he was so beautiful within. I am crying for the body. Who told you that I am crying for the soul? Soul never dies. There is no need to cry for it. But my master's body was also tremendously beautiful. And I will miss it. This is what I call enlightenment. My enlightenment is paradoxical. It has to be so because it is not logical. It is bigger than logic. That's why I go on teaching meditation and love together. Love is part of the Maya, of the appearance. Meditation is part of reality, of God. I go on teaching both. I say love so that you can penetrate a body deeply, so that you can become aware of the soul which is hidden behind, and meditate so that you can attend to your own innermost soul. And let both be together. Don't create any dichotomy between the two. It has been always a dichotomy. People who have been teaching meditation have always been against love. And people, poets, artists, who have been teaching love have been against, always against meditation. I bring the greatest synthesis that is possible in the world to you, the synthesis of love and meditation. And I teach you to grow in both the ways. Move in both the dimensions. Move inwards through meditation. Move outwards through love. Go deeper inside yourself and go farther and farther to the other soul also, so that you don't become lopsided. Meditators who don't love become lopsided. Their inner being becomes rich, but their outer being becomes very poor. Lovers who are not meditators also, their outer being becomes richer, but their inner being becomes very poor. I would like you to become richer in both the ways, love and meditate. The second question, Bhagwan, you are the only man, if I can call you man, whom I have loved without reservation. With other men, I have always wanted to challenge or overcome, but I had to surrender to you without even offering a token resistance. Now, through your love, you are introducing me to Jesus for the really first time. My deep gratitude for this grace. Is it easier, at least in the beginning, for women as potential mothers and lovers to come to Jesus? Does man come to him through his feminine? This is from Paritosh. I have initiated many thousand peoples on the path, but persons like Paritosh are rare. He is an old man, but you cannot find a more childlike person. Will be difficult. Even our little Siddhartha is older than Paritosh. Paritosh is simply innocent. Even little Siddhartha is cunning and clever. When little Siddhartha comes to me, he comes like a grown-up man, defensive. But when Paritosh comes to me, he comes like a small child, totally vulnerable, shy like a small child. On the 11th December, thousands of people passed in front of me, but nobody like Paritosh. He could not even look at me directly. That is too aggressive. He just looked me by the side of his eyes and passed. A small child. A rare phenomena. That's what Jesus called. Unless you become like small children, you will not enter into the kingdom of God. Yes, unless you become like Paritosh, you will not enter into the kingdom of God. This is his question. Bhagwan, you are the only man, if I can call you man. Yes, you can call me man, son of man, just as Jesus calls himself. But I am plus also. Son of man and son of God, you are also the same. Only your other soul is still unrecognized by you. The other soul is still hidden in the morning mist. You have not come to see your own height. You have lived in the porch of your life. You have not entered the palace. The porch is not all. You are more than yourself. You are greater than yourself. You are higher than yourself. You are deeper than yourself. That which is higher than yourself, deeper than yourself, is what we call God. You are just like me. There is not a bit of difference. You are just like Jesus. There is no difference at all. But Jesus has recognized his other source. Jesus has recognized that he is more than himself. Hence he calls himself Son of God and Son of Man both. You can call me man, but Paritosh is hesitant because he can see at least. He can feel the something more is also there. He says, you are the only man, if I can call you man. Because he feels something more also. Grow into that feeling. And that should not be about me only. By and by, let it be about yourself also. Then you will not only love yourself, you will even revere yourself. You will respect also. Just the other day I was telling you love yourself. Now I tell you worship also. If you love yourself, you become man. Rightly a human being. If you worship yourself also, which is tremendously difficult, but not impossible, then you become God also. When the worshipper and the worshipped are one, then God has happened to you. Then you need not go to any temple. Then the temple has come to you. You are the only man, if I can call you man, whom I have loved without reservation. I know it. From the very first day Paritosh came, his surrender has been total. With other men, I have always wanted to challenge or overcome, but I had to surrender to you without even offering token resistance. Why it happened? Because if you can see me, then I am not other than you. Then there is no point in giving resistance. Then there is no point in struggling. Then you will be struggling against yourself. When you surrender to me, what is happening actually is this, that your lower self is surrendering to your own higher self. I am just an excuse. Now through your love, you are introducing me to Jesus for the really first time. Jesus has been taught from 1001 pulpits. His name has been used for these 2000 centuries as nobody else's name has ever been used. More books are written on Jesus than on anybody else. More churches stand in his name than on anybody else's name. Millions of preachers all around the world, millions of missionaries go on propagating his name and his word. And I tell you, Jesus is one of the very unknown masters. In fact, The very dust that missionaries have aroused around his name, the very smoke that theology has created, has become a barrier to understand him. The moment the name Jesus is uttered, immediately the Vatican, the Pope, the Church, and the whole establishment comes to the mind. And whatsoever they have been doing in the name of Jesus has been simply ugly, horrible. It has been a nightmare. That's why when I talk about Jesus, you feel I am bringing a new breeze to you. Because I am not a missionary. I am not a Christian. I am not a priest. In fact, I have to do nothing with Jesus except that I love him. When I bring Jesus to you, I am bringing myself through his name, through his word. I am expressing myself. It is not Jesus and me as two. It is one phenomenon. Sometimes it is almost impossible to say whether I am speaking on Jesus or Jesus himself is speaking on himself. Sometimes the boundaries completely merge. Those moments come when you are listening from your heart. Then boundaries completely merge. Then I disappear. Then Jesus talks through me. Then I can become a vehicle. Because I have no prejudice for or against. And I have no dogma to preach. Jesus can come in his crystal purity to you. Is it easier, at least in the beginning, for women as potential mothers and lovers to come to Jesus? Does man come to him through his feminine? Yes. In fact, God comes always to you through your feminine part. Because the feminine part means the receptivity, your receptivity. You cannot be aggressive towards God. You cannot possess him. You cannot attack and take over him. You can only allow in deep humbleness, in deep receptivity. You open, just as a flower opens to the sun. You open to the divine. You cannot do anything about it, because your doing will be from your male part, and every man is half man and half woman, and every woman is half woman and half man. The difference is not much. A man's man part, male part, is on top, and the feminine part in the bottom. In man, the man is conscious and the woman is unconscious. In woman, the woman is conscious and the man unconscious. Of course, it is true, absolutely true, that whenever a man like Jesus walks on the earth, or a Buddha, or a Mahavir, then women are attracted first. Because they can receive immediately. Their conscious part is feminine. Mary Magdalene is closer to Jesus than any Peter. Has to be so. Because she is not an intellect. She is a heart. She loves him. And love is always total. When men come to Jesus, they need to be convinced. They need to be convinced intellectually. When a woman comes, she needs only one conviction, the conviction of the heart. And the heart has its own reasons. The reason knows not. It simply falls in love. It trusts. So Jesus or Buddha are easily understood by women. They come immediately and easily close to them because they can be open naturally. Their whole biology is of receptivity. They have a passivity. They can open. They are not aggressive. And they can open and allow. And Jesus can enter into them. For men, it is difficult in the beginning. Because he has to fight, struggle, has to be intellectually convinced. There is going to be a war. Unless he is defeated, unless he has tried all the ways in which he could have escaped, he will not surrender. He surrenders only in the end. Once he surrenders, then his feminine part starts functioning. It is easy for women in the beginning. It is difficult for men in the beginning. But one thing more has to be understood. It is difficult for women in the end and easier for men in the end. Because the deeper the love goes, the woman is passing from her feminine to her male part. You must have watched, you fall in love with a woman. She's just nice in the beginning. And there is no need to say about the end. How nasty a woman can become. When the male part comes up, she starts becoming nasty. It starts fighting, quarreling. Every woman, in the beginning, she is just honey. Not of this world. In the end, very poisonous. So it is easier for a woman to come closer to me or to Jesus in the beginning. It is difficult for men in the beginning. They will have to fight. But in the beginning, the whole process reverses. The woman starts fighting. And the man starts surrendering. So they are equal on the whole. But if you are aware, if a man is aware, no need to fight in the beginning. From the very beginning, he can become open, as Paritosh has been from the very beginning. And if a woman is aware, there is no need to fight in the end. She can remain open. But for that, awareness will be needed. If you move unawares, then you are just victims of your own conscious and unconscious minds. Awareness leads you beyond. Then you can use your conscious and unconscious mind, but you are not used by them. So, those who have feminine bodies and feminine minds, should be alert. They should not be satisfied from the beginning. And they should not feel contented that they have come close to me. Their real problem is going to arise later on. But if they remain aware, the problem need not arise. There is no necessity in it. The necessity exists in your unawareness. If you remain aware, you can pass through that barrier. And if you are aware from the very beginning and you have a male body in mind, the awareness will be enough. You need not fight. Because fight leads nowhere. A deep rapport is needed, not fight. And it is not a question of intellectual conviction. A conversion is needed, not conviction. And conversion comes when you are en rapport with me. When you feel me, live me, when you allow me to go deepest in you, and you are not afraid, then conversion happens. And a conversion is needed, conviction won't help. So if you are man, be alert from the very beginning. If you are women, then be alert sooner or later. The male part of you will arise. Both have to be alert. Awareness is neither male nor female, because it does not belong to the body. It hovers above the body. People come to me and they ask, where is the location of awareness? It cannot be located because it is not part of the body. It hovers somewhere above you. It is not exactly in the body. It cannot be located. And once you become aware, you also hover on your body. You are not in the body. That is the meaning of the English word ecstasy. Ecstasy means standing out of oneself. Ecstasy is standing out. When you become aware, you become ecstatic. You stand outside yourself. You become a watcher on the hills. Enough for today.